I'm Mark Franklin, and you're listening to Career Buzz, Canada's unique radio conversation that empowers lives, enriches careers, and energizes organizations. Today on your show, the jobs file in the upcoming election and how learning and development can help you love your job. Hi, I'm Mark Franklin, practice leader of a team of professional career counselors at careercycles.com. I'm pleased to be your host today on Career Buzz, and thanks for tuning in this morning. Lindsay McMurray wants to eradicate the "I hate my job" syndrome from the workplace. With over 20 years' experience building corporate learning firms, Lindsay has experience consulting, selling to, and coaching some of Canada's largest organizations. Lindsay's expertise in performance and learning helps him find that delicate balance between people, process, and technology. Now, as principal of consulting firm Keels in Motion, Lindsay brings a coach approach to his human potential and performance consulting. Stay tuned for Lindsay McMurray in about 20 minutes. But first, what would a Liberal government do to create jobs and especially opportunities for young Canadians? Julie DeBrusen is the Liberal candidate in the riding of Toronto-Danforth. Formerly a lawyer, Julie spent the past 4 years being a mother and role model for her two daughters and bringing change to her local community. She serves on the board of directors of Park People, founded Friends of Withrow Park, and established the Franklin Community Advisory Committee. These and other volunteer efforts earned Julie the Queen's Diamond Jubilee Medal for community service in 2013. Julie DeBrusen is going to be speaking to me in a moment live from her campaign office on the Danforth in Toronto. We're just getting her on the line right now to find out what a Liberal government would do with respect to jobs, especially opportunities for young Canadians. Julie DeBrusen joins me live by phone. Welcome to Career Buzz, Julie. Just getting her on the phone right now. So we had a Green candidate on the show last time, and she was talking about what the jobs profile would look like from the Green side. They were going to invest approximately $1 billion in youth jobs opportunities across Canada. And Eleni McDonald was talking about how that would apply to her riding in Scarborough North. We're looking to get Julie DeBrusen on the line. Julie, are you with us? No, we're just trying to pull her on the phone. So the election in Canada is coming up. It's next Monday, and we're pretty interested to find out from all the candidates what they would do with respect to jobs, and in particular, youth employment opportunities. We've had a website developed, voteyouthjobs.ca, voteyouthjobs.ca, where you can let your candidates in your riding know what you think and feel about youth opportunities, employment opportunities in particular, in your riding. There's a hashtag #VoteYouthJobs, #VoteYouthJobs, that we've been promoting across Canada to engage people in the unemployment, underemployment of youth in Canada. So we're focused on that issue. We've invited other candidates from the other parties, and so far we got a yes from the Liberals and the Green Party of Canada. So we've seen there's been a jobs platform come out for each of the parties. And if you look at the Liberal Party platform, and hopefully we'll speak to Julie about it, what they want to do is create 40,000 good youth jobs, including 5,000 youth green jobs. So we'll find out what constitutes a good youth job. That's going to be worth $300 million over the next 3 years as part of a renewed youth employment strategy. Also, interestingly, the Liberals plan to invest $40 million each year to help employers create more co-op placements for students in science, technology, engineering, math, and business programs. So we're interested to find out what sort of co-op placements those will materialize in. So each one of the parties has their platform. We're pretty interested in what the Liberals have to say about their work. Lindsay, I know we're going to speak to you in a few minutes about all of this stuff, so hopefully we'll hear some interesting perspectives. But you've been watching the election too. What's your take on the, especially on the job side of things? We've heard the different candidates speak about it.
It's always interesting to hear their perspectives. I've got two very young kids, so I haven't been able to follow it as closely as I'd like. And my focus isn't necessarily at the youth. It's more the currently employed and how do you maintain happiness within your job and go forward from that.
All right. Well, looking forward to speaking to you about that Perfect. In a few minutes. Julie DeBrusen, do we have you on the line now?
I am here. How are you doing?
Great. Thanks. Welcome to Career Buzz. So you're an MP candidate in Toronto Danforth. What do you like about your work so far as an MP candidate?
It has been really fun to meet so many people and have so many great discussions. It's a great way to learn a lot more about the community.
Now, you were a lawyer for 13 years before making this switch. What led to your becoming an MP candidate?
Yeah, so it wasn't a direct route, in fact. So I practiced law for about 13 years, and then I took a few years to be at home with my family. So I had a few years at home, and during that time, I became more involved in community work, working with our local food banks and in our parks and with our schools. And through all of that, I kept on seeing a need for more federal partnership for our cities, and it kept on coming up as I was working on all these projects, and that's what led my route to running to be the MP.
Right on. Now, what is the Liberal plan around jobs and in particular opportunities for young Canadians?
Yeah, and it's a big issue because the unemployment rate for youth is double the national average. So that's a particular issue that we need to tackle. So we have several parts to our plan. One of them is to create more summer jobs because it's about creating paid opportunities for people to get experience and to build the resumes and then go forward to get better jobs. So creating 40,000 new summer jobs and then also providing funding for co-op placements and helping subsidize the creation of new co-op placements, working with apprenticeship programs to ensure that there are more apprenticeship opportunities, as well as doubling opportunities to participate in SkillsLink, which is a way to transition into the workforce for people who are facing perhaps more challenges because of disabilities or other types of challenges.
Can you give us an example of the so-called good jobs? It says 40,000 jobs. You're explaining that they're summer jobs, and I've noticed the word good in front of it. So what does the platform mean when it says good jobs?
What it means is good jobs? It means opportunities to develop some very real skills. So some of those jobs are also environmentally linked, working with our national parks, which is a way to help build our national parks and our presence and as well build environmental knowledge and to get skills. So those are some good jobs. And then just generally more ways to get some tangible experience.
Right on. The $25 million per year in a restored youth service program, what will that involve?
The in-service program?
Youth service program.
Youth service program. It's giving opportunities for people to work across the country and to travel across the country while learning more and serving their communities.
Now, there used to be a program in Canada called Katimovic, and I know it always existed under Liberal governments, and it got much scaled down during Conservative governments. What would a Liberal government do with Katimovic?
Well, I think that it's largely the same thing as what we were just talking about. So it's a different wording, but it is the same idea of giving opportunities for youth to do community service and to travel across the country, get to know the country, and get experience at the same time.
Now, how will the good jobs, the summer jobs, the environmental jobs play out in your riding of Toronto Danforth?
Well, so specifically on the summer jobs program, it's just an opportunity for more people, youth here, to have more work opportunities. So I don't think there's a specific allotment towards Toronto Danforth for working in Toronto Danforth or for people from Toronto Danforth to get those jobs. But as a pool of jobs that are made available, then it's something that youth in this area can apply for them.
And beyond youth employment, the jobs situation across Canada is important. We see in the Liberal platform that there's going to be more invested in the labor market development agreements. I'm not sure people really understand that, but the $500 million that's announced there is a lot of money. How is that going to play out?
Well, when we're talking about what the plan is to create jobs across this country, a lot of it through infrastructure investment. which is part of the $20 billion commitment for public transit, $20 billion towards creating greater social infrastructure, and $20 billion towards green infrastructure. Each of those is over 10 years. And so in doing that, we build infrastructure for the future, which makes our cities and our communities generally more prepared for our future challenges, but at the same time creates jobs for people all the way downstream. So we need to kickstart our economy. That's what it comes down to, is that our economy has been flat for a very long time, and we need to make the improvements that we need to get things going again.
And it does look like a fairly tight race in Toronto, Danforth, between Liberals and NDP. How do you think it's going to play out this time around next Monday?
Well, I believe that the people of Toronto, Danforth have a real choice to make and a real decision to make about what they want to see as to their future. So it is going really well, and I'm very hopeful. And I hope to be speaking to you again on the 20th. With lots of good news about Liberal Party plans in Toronto Danforth.
Well, we will follow up with that, Julie. One final question, just back to the personal. You know, you've done a number of things in your career and mm-hmm. made some big choices, and here we are on a career-related radio show. Mm-hmm. From your own experience, is there anything you can share with listeners about what you found personally about making good choices, making good career and life choices?
That's a good question. A lot of my best decisions have been when I have listened to my own instincts about where to go next. And sometimes that might be counter to what other people are saying, but people who follow their gut instincts often end up exactly where they should be. And so for me, for example, making the transition from practicing law to being home for a few years was a great decision and a great opportunity for me. I was very lucky in that regard. And led me to what I'm doing now, which has been an incredible experience.
Great. Julie DeBruston, thanks so much for joining us here on Career Buzz, and good luck next Monday.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Bye for now.
Bye.
My guest this morning was Julie DeBruston. She's the Liberal candidate for the riding of Toronto Danforth, talking a little bit about what a Liberal government would do with respect to especially opportunities for youth. As she said, the youth employment unemployment rate is double the national average. It's somewhere between 14% and 15% right now for people aged 15 to 24. And as we've heard, the Liberal government would do a few different things here, including something in the neighborhood of $40 million to invest in supposedly good summer jobs and another $5,000 related to youth green jobs. So we'll watch that. If you want to listen to more on the election and what the different parties would do, we had Eleni MacDonald on 2 weeks ago, and you can listen to her interview and what a green government would do with respect to jobs, and that's at careercycles.com/radio. My next guest is Lindsay McMurray. So he is of the mindset to eradicate the I hate my job syndrome from the workplace. He has over 20 years experience building corporate learning firms, now as principal of the consulting firm Keels in Motion. Lindsay brings a coach approach to his human potential and performance consulting. Lindsay McMurray, welcome to Career Buzz.
Thanks, Mark. Happy to be here.
So what do you like about your job these days?
Again, the eradicating. I mean, for me, it goes back to a childhood passion. I grew up, maybe I'll date myself, but I grew up with Zig Ziglar, Wayne Dyer, and all the motivational speakers. And I thought I wanted to be a motivational speaker growing up. And one of the things that I recognized as a young child was I hated to hear people say, I hate my job, because it's not just your job. It's the collateral damage of not liking. When you spend over half your waking hours at work, it's your family, your friends, your colleagues, and everybody else that suffers because you're not happy at work. So that's kind of, I love having an impact and helping people better their lives.
And as a consulting firm and a leader, what do you do? What's a typical week?
So one aspect of it is really helping organization and assess and understand what's the challenge they're trying to overcome. I find often organizations make quick reactive decisions and they're more band-aids. So often what I say is other consulting firms come in, look at systems, processes, and technologies and try and find opportunities for organizations. I step before that and look at what are the issues that you're trying to address by making this decision. And that helps them. And then it gets into executive coaching or just some consulting or those types of things that spin off of that.
So it sounds like there's a kind of problem diagnosis part of your work and coaching. What other strengths or skills would you say you draw on to be successful?
Foundational is leadership. Ultimately, what I'm trying to help build are the leadership capabilities and capacities of individuals. My approach with leadership is understanding who you are, how you show up, and what impact you make. And from there, if you understand that, then it's easier to make decisions from where you're coming from. It's taking accountability, which is what you probably hear a lot of companies are trying to figure out. How do you get your people to take accountability?
My guest this morning is Lindsay McMurray. I'm Mark Franklin here on Career Buzz on CIUT 89.5 FM and worldwide at CIUT.fm. Lindsay, let's step back a bit. Everybody has a career story, and we've heard a lot of career stories. We heard a brief snapshot of Julie DeBrusen's story a few minutes ago. Take us back so that we can figure out how you got here. What did you study back in post-secondary?
Business. Initially, I guess, well, prior to getting into business school, I wanted to go against my father's wishes, and I didn't want to go into business, so I decided I was going to be a vet. And it's kind of like Julie was saying, if you follow your heart, that's the right decision. And I didn't, and I ended up in business, and that was the right place to be.
So you wanted to be a vet, and you ended up in business. So what happened then after you graduated?
I dabbled around in a few different things. I mean, coming out of school, looking into what are the opportunities in business, I looked at sales and worked for a couple different organizations, and ultimately settled in the telecommunications consulting space. From there, I naturally went into training and development because that was where my passion was. It was trying to help people, help develop people, and got involved with a technology training firm. I was with them for almost 12 years and then got into leadership development.
So technology training, I mean, training and development is a big area. I think people aren't as familiar with it. You know, as people grow up and then they think about career options, everybody knows what a teacher is because we've had teachers, but they don't really know what that looks like, the whole teaching and learning experience in the corporate world. Yeah. So when you said, I got into training and development, can you just step us back? What did that look like just prior to getting into it for you, and how did that happen to move into that career area?
I think it was my natural curiosity of business and people and trying to understand. Like when people come up with challenges, I always took what I call a coach approach of questioning and trying to understand, like, what's driving this? Why is it? And that becomes the teachable moment. Once you find and understand what their motivating factors are for a change, then you can start to develop or build solutions or training opportunities out of that.
What is a job title? If people are thinking, gee, that sounds interesting. I like teaching, the teachable moment. I don't really want to teach a bunch of high school kids, but I love the idea of being a trainer or teacher. What is that entry-level job title or a typical job title?
There's a couple strains. So if you want to actually be on the training side or development side, then it does come into a corporate trainer, or that's usually the entry point. Then there's also the other side of developing the training programs, and those fall under learning and development. And it could be an instructional designer. There's lots of different spaces to go in there.
And where was your entry point?
I was kind of a unique space because I was always on the business development side and helping build the organization. So from a training and development, I've been in the classroom and done a lot of training, but my passion was also reaching the masses, so helping build the training firms to reach more people.
So that was the sales side of it.
The sales, the strategy, partnerships, and It's a more high level. I often say I know the 10,000 foot. I can tell you if a program is going to be effective and efficient. But for me to sit down and write the program, that's not my strength.
So it was, what, 12 years working for this technology yep. training company? What kind of training did they do?
Initially, they started out, it was more desktop training, so understanding Word, Excel, PowerPoint, and how do you become more efficient and effective with those skills? Because it's such a powerful tool. On average, we probably only use 10% of any application, and when you start to get the full effect and power of what these applications can do, it changes your workplace.
So would you be selling the kind of training to organizations, bringing the trainer into a corporation, yep. or was it the other way around, that the individuals would come to your training site?
It was a combination of both. So part of it was having a public schedule, so an offering where people could show up, the individuals coming from a corporation. Or there was also the other side of it, of having dedicated classes to help specific areas or organizations build the capabilities or competencies, whether it's with an Excel, like a database program, word processor, web development, those types of things.
So we're learning the different jobs here. I mean, there's the corporate trainer role, there's yeah. the instructional designer role, and then there's the business development role, which was more your thing. So, you know, and people might not think about that. What was good? What did you like about that while you were doing that business development role for those 12 years?
I think the thing that really kept me going with it is the change in behavior. When you see somebody realize that, oh, I can be more efficient, I can be more effective, and that reduces their daily stress on what they do. And again, it comes back to eradicating I hate my job. If we're more efficient and more effective, or working smarter, not harder, we're more likely to be happy.
So what happened after that? You worked with this technology training company for a while. What next?
Then I was looking for my next role, and I found another training organization that was... At that point, they were a project management training firm, and they had recognized the great difference, or the difference between a good project manager and the great ones was was leadership skills, and that spoke to me of again, how do you make an impact? How do you change people? And it's the strong leadership skills. So what we did is we transitioned that organization from a project management training firm to a leadership development firm.
So that sounds like it was continuing on in the role of the business development as opposed to the training when you were working
yes,
for that firm.
Same
kind of thing.
Absolutely.
All right. So it sounds like that worked for a while. What happened then?
So then... when I left them, it was kind of what's next? And part of, although I love training and development or learning and development, one of the challenges or biggest frustrations I have with that whole space is the organizational accountability to training or learning and development. Often organizations think of training as something that will fix a problem versus, again, stepping back and looking at what is the problem we're trying to resolve, and what are the means that go? Training is a small piece of it, but don't just throw training at it and expect things are going to change, because if there isn't an organizational or even management's accountability to that change in behavior, then you're throwing good money over bad. And it's frustrating because training has a huge impact when it's done properly, and when it's not, it gets blamed, and that's why it gets pulled as like an advertising budget or those types of things in when downturns happen.
So it's about making training stick.
Absolutely, and sustainability.
And we've heard from a number of guests on Career Buzz how the training budgets in corporations have actually been shrinking over years. So you've been kind of lamenting this problem of the training not sticking. And is that what led to your next step in moving into this Keels in Motion?
Absolutely. Because, again, it's helping organizations get that sustainable change in behavior. In my view, the only reason somebody or an organization should be spending money on training is if they're going to get change in behavior. And how do you get it to stick? And that's the stuff that I love to play with.
How was that transition from working in a firm, I guess this training company that you were working on prior to starting Keels in Motion? How did that feel to leave that and go off and start something on your own?
From a business development, it's always been part of my sales approach and trying to understand and making sure that what an organization is buying is going to stick, and asking them specific questions like, what is your accountability to this? What are you going to do when these individuals get back from their class and we don't fall back into business as usual? How are the managers going to keep that conversation alive? How are they going to ensure that these skills that they have picked up are able to be integrated into what they're doing on a daily basis? So it was somewhat of a natural progression, but it's also going against what a lot of organizations have been doing. So it's getting them to change their mindset around it.
One other question, but we're going to take a break in a moment and then come back and learn a little bit more about performance, learning, and development. But just from your career story point of view and maybe some insights that you can share with listeners. So listeners are always interested in the money and how much people can make. You've mentioned jobs like corporate trainer, instructional designer, and then in business development. Can you give listeners a feel for how much they would make if they were in any of these roles, you know, entry level and then moving up?
It depends on the organization and what you're actually delivering. It's been a while since I've actually been hiring the corporate trainers, but often there's two routes that corporate training firms look at. They either have on-staff trainers or they go with contractors. And depending on your depth, you could be paid anywhere from $200 a day up to $1,200 a day for their ability or for delivering their training. And then in the instructional design, it varies, again, from entry-level positions like on an hourly rate right up into $50,000, $60,000 or plus, depending on the depth and breadth of what you're actually working on.
And then in the sales area or business development, there'd probably be commissions involved, so less of a base and more variable depending on how well you do. What about that? How much can people make, or what kind of range can you give us to give us a sense of what that looks like?
Again, it varies. I mean, can you make a six-figure income in learning and development sales? It is possible. It's not the most common out there. You've got to, again, it comes back to accountability. You've got to be delivering the right thing for the right people and sustainable. So average is probably within your 40s.
Right. And how are things going now business-wise with Keels in Motion?
Business is going well, and one of the things that I've just also brought in is I'm doing some work with Tech Canada, the executive committee. It also fulfills a passion for me around that small to medium-sized business. I mean, they're the economic engine of our country. And so that is also one of the things I'm really spending a lot of my time with as well.
Great. All right, Lindsay McMurray, thanks for the career story in this first half of the show. I want to switch gears when we come back after the break and talk a little bit about learning and development and performance and leadership, because I know that's a passion of yours and how that plays out in companies. So we're going to take a quick break. Stick with us, and we'll be right back.
The experienced man knows what to expect at Harry Rosen. But what if you're just starting out in the world? Well, you should know we carry the likes of Burberry, Moncler, Canada Goose, New Balance, Seven Jeans, and Giuseppe Zanotti, and that a Harry Rosen clothing advisor really can assist you.
Right here, right now. Every day, CIUT 89.5, the sound of your city. Toronto.
And we're back at Career Buzz. I'm your host, Mark Franklin. Before continuing on with today's interview, I want to let listeners know about the inspiring podcasts of Career Buzz episodes. If you click the Career Buzz button at careercycles.com, it's on the right side, you can see the archive. We've been doing the show for a number of years. There's actually a search function at the bottom. And, you know, you could search anything. If you're interested from engineering to medicine to circus performers. We've had career stories of them all. So if you listen to the last show, you'll hear Eleni McDonald. She was a 23-year-old Green Party candidate. So interesting to hear not only what she had to say about the Green Party's platform, but also her own lived experience of getting a degree and a diploma. She has a precarious job right now while she's being a Green candidate. And she was explaining a little bit about how that works and also what sort of skills she's developing as a candidate in a federal election. So that's at the Career Buzz button at careercycles.com or go to careercycles.com/radio. There's also a virtual career development conference. If you're a career professional or other helping professional, coming up on November 2nd till the 6th, November 2 to 6 is the virtual career development conference. There'll be keynote presentations from past Career Buzz guests, Serena Hopkins of the Canadian Career Development Foundation. If you want to go and sign up or check it out, it's careerproconference.ca, careerproconference.ca. And listeners to Career Buzz would get a reduced rate if they sign up using the code SUPPORT. So that's at careerproconference.ca. Use the code SUPPORT for a special discount. I'm returning now to my interview with Lindsay McMurray. We're talking a little bit about human potential and performance consulting. So first off, Lindsay, I was surprised to see the Canadian Society for Training and Development changed its name recently to, let me get it right, the Institute for Performance and Learning. Now, I find that pretty interesting, from training and development to the Institute for Performance and Learning. It seems to suggest some sort of trend or change in the whole field. What do you make of that change?
Well, we have seen transition over the last several years. I mean, we've heard of training and development become learning and development, and then now performance is part of it, because, again, it comes back to the accountability of when people are operating at their potential, that's when the performance comes out, and I think that's part of where they're trying to bring it, versus having training has this stigma around it. And ultimately, when you're looking at training, it's more the tactical or mechanical things that you need to learn, versus learning and development, it's more of a sustained longer term solution.
And now performance, adding that word performance in, it's not just learning and development anymore, it's performing in the workplace.
Absolutely. And it's building on and keeping that performance moving forward. So it's a forward moving approach.
So there we are with a Canadian workforce that seems to want to have job-ready people. And more what we see is hiring practices where people are looking for that needle in the haystack person, that person with all the right skills, because they don't want to invest in people, or they want to invest less than they did maybe 5 or 10 years ago. So there's a trend there, it seems, and I've heard this from other Career Buzz guests, especially ones employed in the corporate world, that and it's lamentable that the learning and development budgets have been going down, and yet employers are wanting more job-ready people.
Absolutely.
So how do we deal with this? What are you seeing in the workplace, and how can we deal with a kind of need to develop people, even though, of course, budgets are tight everywhere?
It's getting effective with what you're spending it on. And that's, for me, where the performance consulting, like, what is the real issue and what are the behaviors that you want to have after you go out on this engagement? And part of it it may not just be an engagement of training. It may be having or instilling some coaching within the organization, or building some coaching skills within the organization, so that the managers or the other colleagues can help build the skills internally, versus just having an external vendor come in and deliver.
We should see if listeners have some comments on this also. If you're in the workplace and have comments or questions about training in the workplace, corporate training, have you received or participated in any training, and did it work? Did it stick or did it not stick? Or if you're an employer, what have you seen about the need for training and your decision to invest or not in training? So any comments or questions about training in the workplace, give us a call. The number to call is 416-946-7000, 416-946-7000, and you can come on the air with any comments or questions about training and development. So So what about this need to recruit job-ready people? Is that reasonable? Should employers not be trying to recruit people who have a lot of potential and then investing in them in training and development?
Obviously, there's two ways to look at it. There's certainly a marketplace of very effective and efficient employee or employable people out there. But often, if you want specific targeted skills that tie to your organization, then building them internally or bringing in a vendor that can help you build those skills is a really great approach. But you've got to invest in it. And it's not just a one-time engagement. It's taking that within and living it within your organization.
Do you have an example where there was a problem that you diagnosed, something where the answer was a good learning and development solution? What happened? You know, if you could paint a picture of an example that you had an opportunity to really bring in a successful learning and development initiative.
I remember one. It was a consulting firm that was looking for a program on innovation. And the challenge is, this is what happens in learning and development, is they get requests from throughout the organization, and this is the skill we want to build. So this one was innovation. The challenge with running an innovation program is, number one, is the organization or is the culture of that organization ready for innovation? And what that looks like is, when these individuals come back and speak to their manager and bring the ideas forward, are the managers willing to hear it, or are they going to return with, sorry, we tried that last year, it's not going to work? And that actually does more damage than anything else. If the culture isn't ready to accept the training or learning that they've put forward. So in that specific example, again, taking a coach approach and understanding, what is the issue? What are you trying to really address? And in this example, they were looking for their people to be able to better diagnose problems. And how do we come up with better solutions? So it was a creative problem-solving program piggybacked by an influence program, so that they were able to go back to their manager and get around the culture.
So how did it work? Was there any measures, or what can you say about how this initiative, the creative problem-solving and the influence management,
soft return. Yeah. I mean, again, there, it comes back to the accountability. Is the organization doing or watching the metrics of change behavior, change actions? In this case, it was more, our people are coming up with better solutions. We're getting the ideas in place. So that, to me, is the sustainable piece.
Yeah, I suppose that's one of the tricky things with training. It's a little bit hard to measure the outcomes. You know, a business initiative, a sales initiative, it's easy to measure because there's dollars and cents involved. How do people measure the effectiveness of training?
It's becoming more and more prevalent, because as HR is being tasked with bringing solutions that have accountability to the bottom line, they're starting to measure things. So if you set up front, these are the behaviors we want to see change. And this is how it will translate into business objectives. And this is where the performance consulting comes in. Of what's the issue we're trying to change? How does it align to the business objective? Then you have the potential for measuring whether you're getting those results, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I suppose, again, an example would be helpful. If we're trying to change behaviors that align with the business objective, can you think of an example where that happens, where there are some behaviors, maybe it has something to do with the innovation example you just gave us, and how that might tie into something that was a part of a strategic plan or a business objective that was outwardly stated?
I know one of the telecommunications consulting or telecommunications firms here is... One of the ones they wanted to do is instill a great coaching culture, and they've gone out and embedded coaching. And what they've tied that to is their customer service reps. So they're watching the metrics on what are the client calls, what's the satisfaction of the results, and are they leveraging the coach approach in there? So, and they've noticed I don't have the numbers in front of me, but it's been an astronomical increase by instilling a coach approach. The results are phenomenal.
So that training initiative was teaching staff, employees, how to be coaches for others in their team.
Yeah, absolutely.
Great. My guest this morning is Lindsay McMurray. He is the principal of Keels in Motion, a human potential and performance consulting firm. I'm your host, Mark Franklin, here on Career Buzz on 89.5 FM in Toronto and worldwide at CIUT.FM. Lindsay, I want to now make the link between learning and development and career development. Right, and here we are. It's a career related show, and people are often thinking, "How do I get ahead? How do I learn and develop and get ahead in my organization?" And we have these things called performance reviews, and sometimes they involve some kind of development plan. What do I need to learn over the next year so that I can get to the next level in my career or in this organization? So, can you help us make the link between individuals' career plans, as they might appear on a performance review, traditionally of some kind of form, and the learning and development initiatives that might be taking place in an organization?
So there's a couple lenses to look at. There's one from the organizational perspective and ensuring one of the big, I think I read the other day, that one of the top two issues that organizations are facing is succession planning, which talks exactly to what you're, how do we make sure we have the right people coming up through the pipeline to fill the positions as we move forward. So that's one lens to look at, and organizations, how do we make sure that we have the right capabilities, the right competencies for the roles that we need to get filled? As an individual, if you're dealing with a large organization or you're working for a large organization, reach out to your HR or L&D. I'm not sure. Typically, it's called learning and development or university, depending on how large the organization is. Reach out to them, and they typically have a path. And what are, again, what are the capabilities and competencies that you need to build on? Also look at, often there is a budget set aside for individuals to go out for training and development. So that's another thing to find out. And it's the biggest thing is take accountability for your own path and don't just wait for the organization to move you through it. If you want to move ahead, step in, go to your HR place. If you're in a smaller organization, then it's a little more challenging because dollars are tighter. But again, look at it down the road. Like, what is the path you want to have? Is this the organization that you'd like to stay with? Then make some commitments of, if I want to move to the next step, then what do I need to be able to do to get there? And are you willing to fund all of it, part of it, and have those conversations? I don't think a lot of people are willing to have those conversations, but those are the ones that make the difference.
Right. And maybe they should. I mean, what we're seeing is the need for people to take more control over their career and their career management. You know, it's especially in small to medium-sized enterprises. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know if listeners are surprised to hear this, as sometimes when I share this in talks I give or in classes that I lead, the percentage of Canadians that are employed in small to medium-sized enterprises versus the big guys, versus the Scotiabanks or the Microsofts of the world. So it's something in the range of 90%, right? So if you're in a small to medium-sized enterprise where maybe there isn't the infrastructure, there isn't a whole learning and development department like there might be if you worked at TD Bank or something. Yeah. So what can we say to people who are working in those environments where there isn't a lot of infrastructure and maybe there's not so much of a kind of an advancement path? Organizations are much flatter these days, but still there's ways to learn and develop. What advice do you have for people to kind of help themselves, you know, to find out what those competencies might be when it's not so structured and to figure out how they could deploy dollars towards learning and development that would actually help them advance in their own careers?
The first thing is have a conversation. Like, I'm a huge proponent of having those difficult conversations or the awkward ones, and talk to your office manager, talk to somebody within the organization. And if that's not possible, then there are lots of opportunities out there. I mean, continuing studies here at U of T has some great programs, whether it's on management skills or whether it's on specific competencies like strategic thinking or influence skills. For me, influence is one of the most underutilized and powerful skills that somebody could ever take. And if you start with that, it changes your conversations that you're having with people.
So how do we learn influence?
There's tons of stuff on the out on the internet. There are some great programs out there. And part of it is just learning from an influence perspective. We typically use our same influence approach time over time. And that's why sometimes we have great conversations and other times we don't. So it's understanding what your learning or your influence approach or style is, and then stepping outside of that and taking on some different approaches rather than constantly asking somebody questions of why. Ask a different one of what's preventing us from being able to move forward with this, or changing your approach. And that's where shift happens and change in behavior happens.
We're talking about training and development or learning and performance here on Career Buzz. And if you have a comment or a question, what's your experience been of training? What kind of training would you like to get? What did you get? Did it stick? Did it not stick? Give us a call. The number to call is 416-946-7000, 416-946-7000. You know, if you don't want to come on air, how about dropping me an email with your comment or question? I am Mark with a K, Mark at Career Cycles. pluralcareercycles.com, and I'll get your comment or question on the air. You are listening to Career Buzz. I'm your host, Mark Franklin, here on CIUT 89.5 FM and worldwide at CIUT.fm. So, Lindsay, right on the top of your LinkedIn profile, it says, eradicating the I hate my job syndrome or something like that, right there on the headline of your LinkedIn profile. So we're talking about the connection between learning and development and career development. How do we eradicate I hate my job?
So there's two ways. There's the organizational side of it, again, the lens of looking at it from an organizational perspective. And then there's the individual accountability. So I'll start with the individual accountability. Hating your job is a choice. And once you recognize that, then you can do something about it. And that choice may be, is this the right job for me? Or is it a means to an end? And having that approach can just change how you're looking at your job. That job or role could be the reason you have the flexible work hours. You have the ability to go home and have time with your kids or spend vacation time. And if that's what's important to you, then coming to work and hating your job, again, is a choice. From an organizational look at it, it's when you see your engagement levels that are low or people aren't happy with their workplace, it could be just one individual or it could be a group or a larger part of the organization. It's looking at what's creating that. Because there's a reason, whether it's an announcement of we've got to do some layoffs and there hasn't been appropriate communication, or often it's a leadership or management issue of that person not aligning with the other individual's approach. And the thing that frustrates me a lot is the organizations that put up with bad leadership. It drives me crazy.
Well, it's happening all over the place,
it
right?
It is. And it surprises me that organizations in today's day and age when transparency is such a critical piece and they put up with it.
So I just want to step back. You said something quite provocative there, that the thought, I hate my job, is actually a choice.
Absolutely.
So, you know, because people wouldn't see it that way. I think people would naturally just say, well, you know, there's all of these conditions outside of me, my boss, the work itself, the whole organizational leadership. These are things that I have no control over. It happens, and therefore I'm naturally going to hate my job. It's not a choice. Mm-hmm. It's just something that flows from things that are happening outside of me. Now, to flip that around and say you're actually choosing to have this thought is kind of radical. you know, it. So you're saying that now, okay, let's say I'm an employee and I have a bunch of bad things going on in my organization, mm-hmm. and I might say to myself, I hate my job, and along comes Lindsay McMurray and he's going to do some coaching for me, help me, and he's going to tell me, gee, Mark, you know what, the I hate my job statement, that's really a choice. So why don't you own that, and now what? Now here's what you can do to try and deal with that situation.
Absolutely. So number one, it's how you're looking at everything around you. It may be a reality that your boss above you is a tyrant, and or is exhibiting behaviors that are not appropriate at work. It's your choice to stay there. It's your choice whether you say something about it or not. I mean, often it's difficult to say something within an organization, and I'd love to see that change. But a lot of people are afraid to look up and say, "I'm this person's responsible for me on a daily basis. Can I really challenge them?" That's one aspect. And stepping back and looking at how is it that you're accountable to this approach. Your manager may not be happy with you because you're coming in with a bad attitude every day. And if you came in and said, okay, I'm going to just be okay with my job today versus I love my job. I mean, is it possible to love your job every day? I don't think it is. Every day, there's always going to be one thing, or every once in a while, this client's a real pain in the... But you still, when it comes down, you've got to be at least happy most of the time. And for me, imagine how powerful our companies would be if people just came and they were okay with their job, let alone loved their job.
It's kind of like saying, you know, your job, if you were to rate it on a scale of 1 to 10, where, you know, 10 is just it's amazing and wonderful every moment and 1 is a complete disaster. Maybe people's expectations are too high. Maybe people are looking for 9s and 10s when they should really be looking for a 6.5 or a 7.
Well, it's evaluating. I think that's part of it, Mark, is just evaluating. Like, what is it I want out of this job? Is it I'm committed to this organization and I'm going to stay here forever? Then if that's your approach, then you need to really look at how you're being in that. What is it you need to bring to work to make it enjoyable? If it's a means to an end, it allows me to have this flexibility in my life. It allows me to have and afford the things I'm looking for. Then again, that becomes a choice. So I'm okay with dealing with a bad boss because I've got the flexibility.
Let's think, you know, we've been talking about training and learning and development within an organization and whether you love your job or not, yeah. And it's a choice. You know, here we are on a career show. It's actually the middle of the day right now, and we may have people listening who are also in transition. Yeah. Right. So, and then maybe they're in job search mode right now. Thinking about training and development and things that we could do on our own, adding courses to our resume, learning stuff that we think, A, we're interested in, and B, might actually help us in our job search. Any ideas on how to optimize that? If listeners are thinking, this would be a good thing to do to invest my time and money while I'm in job search mode?
I think the first thing that I recommend to anybody is step back. Before you start going down that road, look at it. Look at what you want to do. What are you passionate about? What are you good at? And what skills do you have and what's missing to be able to get you there? I've seen so many people that are in a role and they hate their job and then they're just going to jump. And they jump 2 years later, let alone maybe 6 months later, they're in a similar situation because they just made a very quick, rash decision versus stepping back and looking at, all right, I want to go into this role. And even if you're in more of a desperate situation that you need to find a job because you've got bills to pay, it's still a critical thing to step back and look at. What are the things that I'm bringing and what are the gaps? If I want to go into a role in training and development, what are the things that I really need? The internet's a great resource to find what is required out there. And then go out and look for what are the training. And maybe it's taking on a mentor. Maybe it's finding somebody. I mean, LinkedIn's another great tool to go out and search and make connections. Leverage your network.
If people are interested in a career in learning and development, or at least exploring it, what kinds of training or certifications would be relevant for them?
I keep going back to CSTD.
I know it's called the Institute for Performance and Learning.
Yeah, the Institute for I'm even struggling with that one. The Institute for Performance and Learning. They're a great resource because they actually track all aspects of learning and development. So that's a great way, great place to look. Also, checking with organizations if you are in an organization and you want to start moving over to learning and development, then check what are the opportunities that are available. And again, filling those gaps behind you.
So I know the former CSTD, now the Institute for Performance and Learning, they have a couple of certifications. I can't quite remember. There's a
CTDP. I'm not sure if they changed them, but there's the CTDP. There's the MCADT. And
it seemed like there was a lower one and a higher one. How relevant or maybe how in demand are those credentials? If you're looking for work in the world of learning and development and you have a hiring manager maybe who is the head of a learning and development unit, how valuable are those certifications?
I'll look at valuable under two lenses. One is, how important is it to the organization to have those credentials? Then there's also the value of learning those foundational skills. Talking about learning those skills, like understanding what ADDIE is, understanding how to develop and design a great program, that skill in itself it saves you a lot of time. When you're trying to build programs, the larger organizations out there are looking for some level of credential first and then experience. So I don't know if that specifically answers it.
We're just coming to the close of the show. Lindsay, if I come back to the personal, you've had a lot of twists and turns in your career. And if you could share one lesson learned from your personal experience about making good choices both career-wise, personal, because, of course, personal and professional overlap these days. What's one piece of advice or lesson learned you can share?
You know what? I'm going to turn it back to what Julie was saying. Listen to what your heart's saying, your instincts. It's interesting because ultimately with coaching organizations and individuals, we justify all of our decisions by putting SWOT analysis and all of that. But when we make that decision, we're making it from the heart. And when we don't make it from the heart and we go against it, that's when it tends to bite us.
Right on. Lindsay McMurray, thanks so much for joining us here on Career Buzz. If people want to find out more about you and your consulting work,
Look at me on LinkedIn, Lindsay McMurray, Lindsay like the city, McMurray like the fort. Or keelsinmotion.com is the website.
Great. Thanks so much. You've been listening to Career Buzz, Canada's unique radio conversation that empowers lives, enriches careers, and energizes organizations, here on CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm your host, Mark.